people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, as you can tell, our voices are getting a little gravelly. Everything's good because everything is happening here on the show floor at SEMA. You're listening to Shift and Stare. I look at all these people every day. They gather right here, and they try and tell us they're in line to see somebody else. But we know you back there aren't. Hey, want to welcome right away our guest who came by.
Thank you. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, not you, Matt. Not you. Now, Jesse, thanks for coming by today for Shift and Stare, man.
Thanks, man.
We just met 5 minutes ago, and it's like we've known each other for 25 years.
25 years. It is actually 93, 25 years.
Isn't that crazy?
He used to be my boss.
I was your boss. I know.
How'd that work out?
Yeah, boss and Jesse around doesn't work. She probably knows over there. She probably tries, right? Those were back in the Hot Rods by Boyd days when Boyd and I were partners. And, man, you know, those were the best of times and the worst of times all rolled into one.
It was crazy. Like, I don't know, like, thinking back about it, like, we were pretty powerful back then.
Yeah. We were the shit. What do you mean?
It changed my life. I mean, I thought I would build, like, awesome bikes and stuff, and then I was 24 years old when I started.
So was I.
And it was like...
Oh, I didn't mean to laugh out loud like that. Sorry.
It was pretty awesome. We built some rad cars.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Before we do, I want to introduce my co-host right here, Matt DeAndrea. You see him on Shift and Stare every week, but also on his show, which is Carcast.
Yeah.
Oh, Carcast.
Yeah.
That's right. With a tall
Adam
guy.
And Goldberg.
A tall Italian guy and then a big guy.
Yeah, they're both actually way taller than I am.
I know.
Yeah.
Matt, everybody's taller.
And right next to me, Aaron Hagar. We call him Double A-Ron.
Hey, folks.
And, this guy is into rat rods. We won't hold that against him. But he just doesn't want to paint anything, Jesse.
I'm tired of painting.
I like how rat rods and old school are the new code words for shitty build.
Well, I try not to fall into that category, so.
No, bro, it's old school. I built it myself.
Yeah. They're trying to say things like outlaw now.
It's got patina.
Yeah.
Well, you know, patina on a Ferrari and a patina on that old car you found in a field are two different things.
Yeah, exactly. Is it burned in the sun or is it, you know?
Right. But anyways, Jesse, we were talking about back in the day, back at Hot
Rods. You guys have a lot of history together,
man. We got stories we can tell, and
Brad
stories
was
we can't
before
tell.
The tattoos, but
I have the best. Well, because Chip was there with us.
Yeah, and I have a great story about you and Chip.
Brad and Chip, like every day, you could feel the tension because Brad worked in like his office was up in like kind of the corporate offices of the wheel shop, and then Chip was like the manager or whatever he called himself of the hot rod shop, and it was awesome.
This is an interesting point because we thought that Brad co-owned the business, so we want to hear the real stories.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, Brad came in and was part of the prospectus. Actually, Brad was responsible for the downfall.
Oh, blame it on me.
Because he came in, and it's not Brad's fault, but Boyd's like a hustler, wheeler, dealer, and once he went public, and Brad was part of the prospectus and everything, and went public in a big way, then... All of a sudden, there was a board of directors, and Boyd couldn't call the shots anymore.
There's some financial responsibility.
Yeah, payroll's a little short, and Boyd calls up, like, Wheel Center, hey, come buy these wheels for 60 grand real quick. You can't
or,
do that.
Or goes to the aluminum recycling pile.
It was
such a great time because we had such a great group of people there.
Yeah.
What
were some of the cars that you
Chip
guys
and...
worked on together while you were there?
The first one the day I started, I was stuck on Michael Anthony's 33.
Yep.
And extending all the cowl and everything to kind of...
He like still has that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so that car was all bare metal. And that was my first project. Then we started doing like metal tattoos where Boyd motorcycle wheels.
Yeah. And remember how hard it was to get them to straight in the beginning?
Man.
We talk about pulling your hair out.
Yep.
Wow.
And then I think the first big, we finished the Smoothster, which won the Roadster Show, like the real Roadster Show at Oakland.
Yeah, the Oakland Roadster Show.
Yeah, and then I came right after Shazoom.
Yep.
Like within a couple weeks of that. And then like Michael Anthony's car, the Boydster, Smoothster, Ron Kraft's Cadillac, and then a few bikes.
We started doing the bikes and and helping Little John with his. And I mean, that was, there was just so much we were doing there and so much was happening. And like I said, I tell people all the time, Jesse, because they'll say, wow, you know, Jesse and Chip and you and everything. But I say, what you don't know are all the talented guys, the metal benders, the guys in the body shop.
The Steve, I mean, not just metal workers, like Steve Greninger.
Yeah.
Who's like an artist with electrical. Every one of those Boyd cars, if your hand gets anywhere near the ignition, whoom, it starts up. Wow. And like you look under the dash and the wiring's all stacked. And
it's
like
perfect.
Forms a wave going to, you know. Wow. It's like,
I tell you, there's an art to that as well. The one that I don't like to touch. It's a nightmare under there doing the
wiring. Well, you would know because we can't even get near to look in a Boyd's car. It's like, oh, get another car. to appreciate that.
But, I mean, even our body shop guys, you know, Keith and those guys and just blocking everything. Yeah. Just
for
absolutely
months, probably,
perfect.
Right? For
I get a lot of questions, too, about Boyd. Everybody, because I had, like, you guys all had one relationship with him. I had a different one because I think he was always afraid I was going to sock him.
I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to just tell everybody the story about it. You said Chip and I. Well, how about the time that infamous Art Boy incident? Well, he's got a blank face like, oh.
I remember when we were finishing the Smoothster, it was Andy, Chip, and myself staying all night. And Chip's like, I was really tired, and I think I had a hangover. And Chip, we're laying underneath the car in Andy's work area. And Chip, like, mouthed off to someone, like, I don't know what he called me, an asshole or something. And I'm laying, like, on my back this far away, and I, like, punched him in the face. and then he almost teared up, and he went
home.
Oh,
man.
And then he, like, he had the keys, so I couldn't leave because I couldn't lock the door. So,
well, I came around the corner one day, and you had him up against the wall, like by the shoulders, and go. And all I heard was, "Listen, Art Boy, don't talk to me like that." And I'm going, "Oh my God, what's going on?"
He was a bigwig there. I mean, I love Chip now, but he's Chip. Like, we all know him as different from everybody.
Oh, we've known him for so long. You know, I mean, it's just like you've known me. I've known you. You've known Chip.
Yeah.
And when you work in the trenches, it's always different, too.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, everybody gets, especially on builds like we're talking about, where everybody's got bags under their eyes and
all hands everything's. On deck.
Yeah. And Boyd comes in and says, hey, the customer's going to be here in like about 3 hours. Can you do this, and this? God. And we're like, are you kidding me?
No wonder he was working all nighters, and then there'll be some Japanese TV show filming with Boyd. We're just busting ass, and then he'll come and chuck up a piece of material in the lathe. Pretend like he's cutting something while they film, and then just leave the material sitting there. Like,
for Johnny to take care of.
Thanks, Boyd.
And the one thing I want to clarify, I always say when people ask me about the Boyd days and like that, the one thing I always talk about is we were there pre-TV days. I mean, we're not talking the TV days.
Pre-internet.
Yeah.
Email, internet, cell phones.
And all the cars you mentioned, Cadzilla, Aluma Coupe, all these iconic cars that were built. And it was fun.
You want to hear a funny story about Dick Brogdon?
Sure.
So I saw him I saw Rod at a drag race. My wife was racing, and I go, "Hey, when you see your dad, go behind him and go." So Dick used to do that. Every woman or guy's wife or customer that come in the speech or the hot rod shop that was female, he'd always like walk up behind him when they weren't looking and go. He got totally mad at Rod and me and said he never did that.
Well, I don't remember him doing that because, you know, as an employee, I couldn't have condoned that. So I don't ever remember saying that.
Brad's always hiding.
I can't have any of my employees doing that. That could come back and haunt me. But no, it's so Jesse, I mean, there was the time I had left. I'd sold out my interest and things kind of spiraled out of control over there.
It got really corporate, and people came in and started calling the shots. And then I was, like, I started the whole sheet metal company kind of right at the same time I started there. So after a couple years from Boyd's, I mean, I was working a lot of hours at the hot rod shop, and I think Boyd was paying me, like, $750 a week salary, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I was shipping like $15,000 a week in fenders working out of my garage at night.
I remember that.
So as soon as I'd go home from Boyd's, I'd stay up and weld all night. And it just like got to a point And then Chip started being a dick, and I was just like, I don't need to do... Like, I sent some parts to someone for a magazine shoot for their bike. Then Chip went and, like, told Boyd. Chip was mad because Boyd gave me a new Astro van. And, like, Chip had been there longer, and I kind of... Chip had one way of succeeding or advancing. I just busted ass. Like, cool, I'm going to ship wheels and build stuff. And Chip got really jealous and told Boyd I was stealing. I'm like, all right, that's
man,
cool.
Man, some stuff went down.
Yeah. Man, I'm glad I was sold out by then. I just sold out.
We're still friends. Chip's wife still hates me, though.
I know she says very nice things about you whenever I see her. So, but in a way, the downfall of that, you know, after I left and everything, was one of the best things that ever happened to you. Because it forced you to do more of those fenders, more of those struts, the rear tails and everything. And I remember the day that you came into my office and said, man, I'm not there anymore. And, you know, you honestly said, like, man, what am I going to do? Well, but then you told me what you were doing. I knew what you were going to do, Jesse. You were going to do what Jesse does. Go out and make shit happen.
Yeah, just work. You know, that's been my... Like, was imprinted on me as a kid, like, just work and bust ass, you know, and I still do that. And it's funny, like, I saw the rise of Boyd's and everything got so big. And then I experienced deja vu with West Coast Choppers in California.
Right.
You know, 7 buildings, a whole city block, 180 employees. But what I saw with Boyd taught me, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm going to beat the train to the station. I'm going to shut it down and downsize and move to Texas and, like, reconnect with my tools before it shuts itself down on my own.
Yeah. You know,
like, well, and you're just going to be in a people manager, already 180 employees.
Dude,
I was like
spending $300 a month on toilet paper.
Yeah, that's what happened.
And $105,000 a year on packing foam.
It's those are the things that when companies get big and they still have their soul, but when you're the manager and the personnel director comes in and says, you know, like at Boyd's, we had 490 people at the height.
Wow.
And they'd come in and they'd
And Rafi.
Yeah, and Rafi. But they'd come in and they'd say, hey, people are coming to work at 7:45, and they're hitting their time clock at 7:45. They don't go to their desk till 8. We're spending X amount of dollars. And that's when you kind of glaze over and go, I'm a car guy, and this is happening. But, you know, it happens. But you did a really cool thing. And do you love it down in Texas now?
It's awesome, man. It's just like... Like, I lived for a short time in Riverside with my dad in the 70s.
Okay.
When I was a little kid. And, it, like, it reminds me of that, where you could just, like, ride dirt bikes, shoot guns. Like, nothing's, you know,
regulated. That's what you're doing now.
It's awesome. And that's, and we kind of, I don't know, the shop got so big that I didn't work anymore. Like you said, I was a manager.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun. Now I've eliminated everything from my business that gets in the way of me working. Like, I have my own shop by myself, another shop across the creek where 12 guys work, and it's just always behind the gun. Like, and I love it. That's what I was meant to be doing. I wasn't meant to be, you know, a manager. Like, I mean, I have management skills that I use every day, but more work.
You do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I look and, you know, I look at your machinery that you have and your furnaces and all that, and you're honing your skills while you're having fun doing it.
Yep.
It probably makes you better at doing it because you're doing it at a rate you want. Is that true? Hey, we're joined by Heather Storm. You've seen her on Velocity's Garage Squad. She's our mystery co-host, but she was late.
It's not a mystery anymore.
So, and she also co-hosts with me on another podcast. And what's the name of that?
Man Seeks Adventure.
That's right.
We had an adventure last night.
Oh, yes, we did. We got in about 3 in the morning.
That explains why you're
late. Being a little late.
Nice.
But no, Jesse, we were... Hey, Goldberg, what's happening, man? Oh, no, you didn't interrupt at all. Don't worry about it.
Goldberg sneaking through the crowd.
So, get him. But anyways, Jesse, I mean, does that make you... tell us where it changed. Because you were talking about how, I'm a manager, but now I don't have to manage as much. How about your soul as a craftsman and a fabricator, you know?
Well, I think, I don't know, just, I like the challenge of, like, you know, figuring out a new process or method and then going to Israel in 2009 and learning how to forge.
Yeah.
And then which, like, the best forging guy lived on a kibbutz and, like, really traditional coal forge and hammer, made all my tools, then learned how to forge. And then I didn't, guns weren't even on the radar. I wasn't planning on building guns, and it kind of, it found me, like, this is what my skill set is, like, supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And it, like, it's more important because all this stuff, all these cars, these UTVs, Jeeps, trailers, boats, that's the first shit on Craigslist as soon as money's low.
That's for sure.
For everyone.
That's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, but guns, people are not planning about their son. They're planning about what their son's son's going to think of them when they design the style of weapon they have. And it's just such a more personal thing, you know, like, not only is it, like, protection in a weapon, but it's just this, like, it's stuff that, like, all this stuff is half the fun, or 80% of the fun is showing people and see, like, yeah, dude, check out my truck. You know, like, they everybody wants to see everybody's stuff and show it off and be proud. These people are buying it and spending a year or two building it and forging, and nobody will ever see it. That's how personal it
is. I have to tell you, and anybody that works with metal, when you look at Jesse's and what he's doing, forging with these old machines that are just epic in and alone, they're works of art, and seeing what you're doing with that raw metal, which we don't get to see a lot in where we are, unless you work at a foundry, it is amazing to see what you're doing with this.
I mean,
tell us about the experience, the weight, the hammers. I mean, that's
and
stuff
it's got
to
only be a handful of artists that are doing it the way you're doing it.
It is a lost art.
Only person in the world that's actually forging a Damascus weapon by hand.
Right?
That's incredible.
I mean, I got chills. Look, no joke. I mean, this is heavy stuff.
And
I love this.
Like, I see a lot of people starting, you know, I was the only coppersmith in the late 90s. And then now you can buy a brand new Pettingill and Yoder. So it's like kind of people seem to follow what I see first, you know, which I don't mind. I think it's great to inspire people that, you know, they want to.
That's the best way.
Come on, you're driving a traditional force back into business. That is something to be very,
that's
of
cool.
All the things that you've done and made a difference in the world, that's one that I can say, man, just to have that one alone is great.
Yeah, and making,
great.
Like, even though, like, I do this glamorous stuff like cars and motorcycles and guns, I'm still using the same skills that someone that's a pipe fitter or someone that's
a
pipeline welder or,
that's the core,
yeah, or a machinist. You know, it's the same exact skills. So I think it kind of kids that maybe have a dad that's doing that kind of blue collar job, it's maybe making them a little bit more respectable because, like, oh man, my dad does the same thing Jesse does, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you have complete guns, a line of guns that you sell, or pieces that other people could sell? Like, you were talking about the fenders, somebody would buy your fenders and do a bike. So you have, like, a line of products and then a custom shop, somebody comes and builds to order?
No, we have about 7 different models of pistols,
okay,
and then as a base, so 2 different sizes, and then we customize those based on the customers, what their preference is, you know, so.
And how long does it typically take from, you know, the concept to getting
the
gun?
The Damascus ones take me a year each.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
So
Now, folks, for you, those of you who don't know Damascus, you want to explain that real quick?
Yeah, it's basically taking two, like, a high carbon steel and then a high nickel steel, and I heat it up to about 2250 degrees, like yellow hot, and then either put flux or I weld it in a canister so it turns the surface to glass, so you put it under the press and it sticks together and makes it one piece. I'm still like, it's still like black magic every time. Like, every forge I do, I've done it 1,000 times. I cut it, I'm like, oh shit, that's one piece again. I can't.
How that happened?
So if you've seen it, folks, it's that wavy metal that you see with those layers and layers and layers of folded and bonded metal. I mean, this is a real lost art going back, you know, Japanese swords. I mean, back and back and back.
3,000 years. Damascus,
right?
Syria is where they developed it, you know, because they didn't have it, like, they couldn't go to metal centers. So they had to combine the steels they had, and I think they probably developed it by accident. And then they went west to Europe, and then those were the best swords, and so that became a thing.
That became the standard.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So appreciate what you see. Awesome.
And it goes right back to what I'm talking about. It's the soul, because we were talking about the soul. There's soul in all of that because of all the effort, all the heritage, everything that it takes to do.
Yeah, I think that's always been my lucky thing, is like, even though it was like West Coast choppers and firearms, there's still me doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I see so many brands and shops that make cool stuff, but there's like, there's not a dude, you know, like,
right.
You know, it's like
a disassociation.
You know, yeah, Annihilator, Speed Shop, or whatever. And then there's not really like the
yeah.
guy.
Who's the Annihilator? Yeah.
Made in China.
No, for sure.
You're putting your individual energy into each piece.
Yeah, and I think with the gun industry, though, with like motorcycles, I don't, you know, everybody knew that I was building it, but with gun stuff, I think there's only myself and one other gunsmith, this Justin, who's awesome. I don't think they know that I build all the guns.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They think I'm like wearing a top hat and a monocle. And like, hey.
You're just walking through going, yeah.
Train car
yeah.
of money in.
I don't know what your forging costume looks like, what your forging uniform. Maybe there is a top hat and a monocle. Maybe
it's all leather. Yeah.
So, Jesse, you were talking about pipe fitters and like that. It leads right into the truck that you built for SEMA.
Yep.
So tell us about that. It's over at the Linex booth in the South Hall upstairs.
I just wanted to do something. Well, Linex started in 1993, and so this is their 25th anniversary, and they asked if I would do a 93 Dodge. I'm like, duh. I had the welder for like 2 years, was finishing it. I'm like, oh, man, let's make it like a real welding truck, like old school, early 90s. And it's got a 1958 Lincoln SA200, like copper-wound welder on it that's all restored, but shortened and you know, custom a little bit. But yeah, I just kind of, I don't know, I'm a weirdo, man. I'll go down the freeway and I'll see like a truck with a service bed that's lifted a little bit and maybe a little small boom crane, and I'm like, I gotta, like, whoa, what's that guy doing? Like, I could use that today, you know. I don't know, like, I think my custom taste has evolved to not just like lowered cars and trucks and like custom stuff to like seeing like more utilitarian, like,
yeah,
you know, stuff, you know, like
it harkens back to that working man that he really would love to have a big lifted truck, but he's working for a living, so
well,
it gives his work truck a little bit of lift.
Custom work trucks probably comes from Southern California for concrete pumpers. There's two things that inspired me when that kind of build, like concrete pumpers always have trucks that are all chromed out.
Yeah, painted with a nice lettering.
Because those guys make bank, so they put it back in the vehicle. And then during the trash sanitation strikes in New York, all the privateer little trash trucks running around New York City were all custom, fully custom paint and chrome. And it's like, I don't know. You see a trash truck with some chrome on it, I'm like, yeah.
That guy's, he's picking up the good trash.
Yeah, exactly.
The chrome trash. Yeah.
So that truck, it's over at Linex. Everybody can go over and see it.
Yep.
And what's next on Jesse's plate?
We just finished the documentary. We filmed all of 2017 for PBS.
Oh, really?
So I did my first project that doesn't do anything. It's I did a sculpture with world famous sculptor named Albert Paley.
Okay.
And we finished sculptures 50% and then shipped them to each other.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was really like,
that's a copper, right?
I thought, no problem. It's just metal. And man, I really struggled with it because it doesn't,
it's static.
It's somebody else's roadmap you're starting with.
A lot of other
with.
People can see what I do as art, but I see it as like, the bikes are more like a lawnmower to me. Like, it's like, yeah, I built this thing to do this.
It's a custom pumper truck.
Yeah. And I don't really, to like step back and do it for the purest form, just for visual thing. Like, it was really a struggle. Like, I thought it was going to be easy. Oh yeah, I could be an artist. And then like,
you're on the function side of form and function.
It took a year to finish. Like,
so what are we talking about? What type of sculpture?
It was, they're 8 feet tall, 36 inches wide, and that's it. That was the only parameter.
And
so
did you guys sort of define each one? Like, you gave him yours and said, hey, this is what I was thinking. Nothing.
No rules. The documentary turns out to be really, it's really dramatic because without being like fake reality TV dramatic.
You mean you're not throwing a wrench across the room?
Or the reality TV show. Here it is. Oh, my God.
if we don't get those parts soon, we're never going to make it.
You're like, the customer's going to be by soon.
You can just put that in any of the shows. It applies. Yeah.
There's never enough time. There's never enough time,
don't
damn
have
it.
Any time.
Open the garage door and roll it out.
Yeah. Yeah. How many times have you said that?
Yeah, quite a few. Guilty. Right here.
So but it's true. Obviously, you guys know what the results are because it's all done. The documentary's out there. But what was, without giving it away, what was sort of the impression when you guys saw what you did to each other's stuff?
Oh, I was pissed. And like the guys at the shop were pissed and like posting stuff on Facebook. I'm like, hey, man, we got it. Because I didn't have anything to do with the producing or editing. But like they were really, we put a lot of time in the one we sent him. And we didn't see his struggle. He struggled too. It was like he's 75 years old and never collaborated with anybody in his career. And I'm the first and probably only guy. And it was like really...
The last guy.
How was that for you, collaborating with someone who
well,
is that set in
the story goes, before I started working at Voids, when I was 21, I get letters every day and people sending DMs and Facebook and emails like, dude, I want to work with you and can I pay you to come apprentice and like, I want to learn the skills you have and all that. And like, I get a lot of it. Well, when I was 21, I mailed Albert Paley that same letter.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And like, that's he never cool. responded.
No, but, of course.
But like, that's kind of what started it. We met and so it was kind of.
Does he remember? Does he know? Okay.
No.
Yeah, I tossed that with Kyle. Like,
yeah. Just this kid.
Yeah, right. Just Dave. But is that how that came up? Did somebody approach you on doing the documentary and you said, hey, here's a story. Here's a guy that the sculptures or.
It started on Instagram. I liked a bunch of stuff that he had done. And then his, the lady that manages all of his stuff, like said, hey, if you're up in the Northeast, come by the shop. And so my wife was racing at English Town. And so my daughter and I drove up for a day and spent the day with him. And then we kind of just said, man, we should do something together. And we were just going to do one little tabletop sculpture and auction it off for charity. And so now we did it. And then they're auctioning it. The Wright Auction House in Chicago is going to auction them off in the spring.
How cool.
And then it goes to 5 different charities that teach kids different hand skills.
Oh, so, that's
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah. Trade skills. So, but it's awesome. I don't know. I like got really emotional watching it because it's PBS. Like I've been on Discovery for almost 20 years, but to see like my name associated with like that, Catherine T. McPhee found it, usual PBS stuff. I was like, wow.
Big Bird.
That's big stuff.
Because we grew up with PBS. That was the original programming,
So it's like, and I didn't get paid anything. And like, it's cool to do stuff where it's, just purely for the art of it.
Yeah.
Well, and this guy's your idol to a degree, right? Yeah. I mean, you sent him a letter when you were 21 years old, and now you get to work with him.
Yeah, and just off a picture, like seeing a picture that of him forging, and I didn't even know what that was then, but I'm like, man, I like that guy. Like,
right?
You know, and I think I have this a little bit of the same effect on people, too. You know?
Now you're that guy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it all kind of comes full circle, and I mean, you keep inspiring people. And, man, we appreciate you coming down to do the show.
Thanks, man.
25 years, dude.
Can you believe that? The first time I came to SEMA was 25 years ago when we had the airplane hangar in here.
Yeah, when we did the airplane hangar. Yep. Up in the hall up there, we did it was like a Quonset hut booth.
Yeah, and we had a purple roadster like Lucci or who's was Vern Lucci's car.
It was the one that we did for AMBR years ago, but yeah.
Musselman's car.
The guy on the East Coast. I can't remember his name, but tall guy. But yeah. And did you ever get in that car, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't move your feet?
I drove all of them when nobody was around.
We all did, yeah.
And, my son's got that problem.
So, yep. but no, man, we could just go down the road with story after story and have all kinds of great stuff. But
look at that dude.
Hey, Bodie, how you doing, man?
Guy.
We were trying to arrange a little reunion here. We got a Monster Garage reunion. Bodie Stroud
no
just
kidding.
Got on stage. And
so we're not kicking you off if you want to stick around a little bit. Okay, cool.
I want to hang out until 3. I'm sure there's a story or two between these two guys.
Now we are going to have to run the money away.
Bodie was on... Bodie was on the Monster Garage episode where we turned a Rolls Royce into like a porta potty pumper. And took it up to Beverly Hills and made everybody mad.
Yep. We had one of the pumper guys trying to cut us off, and we got in front of him. I hopped out, pumped it, and
it leaked a little bit.
That's right. I forgot about the Monster Garage stuff. We have the Woody, the lifted Woody up in Tahoe. That's
Where I live.
That was
a pretty nice one. Like, Doug Carr did all the wood on that thing. It was nice.
Yeah, Doug's amazing. The gentleman that owns it, Tom, up in Lake Tahoe, he's real talented. He does amazing woodwork, too. And that car is his inspiration. I guess they share it. All the guys bought it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they all share it. So they all, it's very
That's
cool.
That's cool.
Good work. Good
so,
show.
Bodie, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming by Shift and Stare.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I haven't seen you in a while.
I know.
Do you just stay up in the valley being busy building cars and chassis?
I just work. Yeah. Just keep my head down and work.
That's good. What's new?
We started doing our chassis business. It's
BSI. You got a booth here, right?
We got our booth here, our first big booth here. And I just started just over years of... It's actually this guy's fault right here that I'm doing it. He's like... I had that truck on Monster Garage, and he's like, "Well, why are you doing this? Why are you pumping toilets for a living? You should be doing this." I was like, and I listened to him.
I was just telling you what you already knew. You're just afraid to do it.
Yep, that was it. So
it's funny because every time I walk over to his shop and he's struggling, he's like, "Fucking Jesse, made me do
it." I'm actually going back to toilets for more money.
Gilded, right?
Yeah.
So you got the chassis out there. You're building your own chassis now, and you're selling them as rolling chassis, the standalone chassis, sort of everything in between.
Yeah, we. You know, I just started building what was coming in. I've used just about everybody out there, their chassis, their front ends. And I just, you know, as a builder and as somebody that's always trying to be different and unique, I just kept developing something new, and I got a couple patents on some alignment devices, and then we started doing Bronco chassis, Mustang chassis, and it all just kind of went, it just went from there. And so here I am now selling product, and it's beautiful product. It's all TIG welded. We laser cut everything. There's no grinding. There's no nothing on them. It's mandrel bent. So it's just really nice, clean product. What I concentrated on was geometry. I learned geometry. And once I learned how to set up geometry and make a car ride, handle like it should, I was addicted.
Yeah, because it's never good when they dogleg down the road.
That's
Seen plenty of those.
Yeah.
There might have been one or two Monster Garage builds that didn't go exactly straight.
More than two.
I saw the Mustang that you guys have out there in your booth. It's basically a racing car that you guys built for a client. Yeah. It's on one of your chassis. Tell us about that car.
You know, if you're in the industry, I think the way you become known is... You have to build a product that you test and that is proven. It's a track car. You know, every major company has done it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what we did. We came up with a race car. It's a 65 Mustang with our chassis, chromoly. It only weighs 2,800 pounds.
Wow. Nice.
And, we just started racing this thing and proving that our chassis worked and geometries were set up good and could make it handle like a new car.
Yeah, it's a badass ride. You guys want to check it out. Those of you that are here in front of us, it's out front on the far side of the four drift pads. So as you're walking toward the street, on the other side, just walk around the drift pad and you'll see it's a light blue.
Yeah, light blue. It's the color of the new Ford GT.
Matt, did you get a photo of it?
I do.
Okay, well, we'll post it on our website then so that our listeners can see it.
Yeah.
If you didn't make SEMA and... Along
right
with all our other photos.
Remind me to get a photo of it.
I knew he was going to do that.
I got one.
You can message him a photo later.
You're going to have to remind me to remind you. I'm not going to remember.
I do got a photo of the car.
So we've got two fantastic fabricators up here. I mean, you know, I've known both you guys for so long.
I thought you were going to say Aaron and Heather.
Well, I was getting to that.
Now, wait
okay?
a minute.
They fabricate stories pretty damn well.
Nah, come on.
So, you guys did one episode of Monster Garage together? Is that?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I kind of helped on the motorhome, the fun park.
Yeah.
I came out and took out
the fun house,
the potty tank. You know, <They're> anything like, that had to do with the portable.
Anything
potty
with a crapper in it. They're like, let's give Bodhi a call. There,
yeah. It was fun, though. It's like a lot of, I think people don't realize like how much work that show was. Like 5 days, that's it.
That's it.
Monday at 8 a.m. till Friday at midnight.
I tell everybody, it was real. I mean, it was literally, it was real. Jesse called me up one day, asked me if I could do the job. I said, yeah. Told me the day to be there, and we built it.
Yep.
There was no, can you do it over? Can you say this? Can you do this? It was, you did it, and that was it.
It was good. It was a fun show.
It was a fun show.
I mean, it was trendsetting. I mean, you know, it just moved in a direction where you got to see hands-on stuff.
Yeah,
and that's what was so cool.
See. I think, like, producers have been so heavy-handed with this, like, new crop. It's morphed into, like, a really lazy way to make TV.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to wait out any drama. I mean, I've never worked at any shop anywhere that when you're trying to do stuff, there isn't some kind of drama or some feelings get hurt. The nature of any business.
That's how we started the show today, talking about it. You know,
I mean, it's funny because the truth to this is that, you know, we get approached by production companies all the time, and they follow you around, and you go, well, just follow us around and you'll see it. And they're like, no, we don't have time to just follow you around. And so everything is scripted. Everything is fabricated. Everything is about getting insurance.
I'm dug in, man. I won't do it.
Yeah.
Like I did a really nice pilot for History Channel, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago or 5 or 6 years ago, called American Craftsman, where I'd go work with kind of like what I always do, work with the older craftsmen and show that. And History Channel's notes were, well, do you think you could have a sidekick on the show that you could, like, yell at?
He's a production assistant. I'll be happy to yell at him all day long.
Yeah.
I want to include Heather down here, I mean, for a second, because, Heather, you're on a show right now where you guys go out and you restore a car in somebody else's garage.
Yeah, and for us, and I tell everybody, they're like, there's no way you did a car in a week. And I'm like, yeah, it was a week. So we have 7 days to get that car done. Now, sometimes there is a weekend in between, thankfully, because we have to order parts and we have to source things. But I mean, some of the mechanics and the guys, they're going out to junkyards. They're calling friends for parts. I mean, anything they can do to make it happen. So there is a real time crunch that's happening.
No,
we don't have months to build a car.
Show,
we don't have that type of money, you know?
There's no super heavy fabrication on your show.
No,
it's pretty much a light restoration.
No, it's a rescue. Yeah. You know, we're getting the car that isn't running and get it running again back on the road.
That's cool.
And, you know, and make it safe is the priority, really. So, you know, it's not a whole bunch of stuff, but at the same time, it's a lot of little stuff.
How much wrench turning do you do?
A lot.
I know you do. That's what I'm asking. like, what kind of stuff? Brake jobs?
I do anything that they have me do.
TIG welding?
Not like
we're not welding that much. I mean, we're doing basic car mechanics, you know?
Does it ever get doggy on the show?
Doggy? What?
Bodhi, you've done a bunch of TV since working with Jesse back in the day as well.
Again, his fault.
You did other shows after me?
Yeah, I did, man.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
I've been chatting with him too, and he's cursing up a storm the entire time. The entire time.
But I'm with Jesse. I mean, it's a different place. I tell everybody, it's like, I did Monster Garage, and it was the funnest show. I had a blast with this guy. My wife,
we were just talking about at lunch, because Dave Tucci that was on the, that Woody Gilmore dragster into the hot dog cart.
Yeah.
And like everybody, like I go, camaraderie is like an amazing thing when you work with your hands. Cause like, since we work together, like I look at you like, fuck that guy. And like, but if I see someone like a business colleague, like, oh, hey, how's it going, Joe? What's happening? There's not that.
No.
Like the camaraderie you have about sweating and busting your ass with someone's like for life.
That's trenches, man. Yeah. Trenches.
Yeah. And you succeed in like bringing something to life together.
You can't show that on a fake reality show.
No.
Like it's got to be a struggle. And the goalpost has got to be almost impossible to get to. Like, once Wednesday rolls around, you're like, man, we might just make it.
That's, you know, how, like, I feel every episode of Garage Squad, though. We might just get this car done.
Hey, get everybody out of their comfort zone, you know?
Yeah.
There's always that point in a build where, just what you said, you know you're round in the corner, and then some shit comes and just, you know, goes wrong. And if you can solve it, that's part of the camaraderie, because you went, okay, we did it. Yeah. We got through that hill. That mountain got moved.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's the best part. Well, so you've got your new chassis company. What's the name of it?
BSI Performance.
And where do we find you online?
What's that?
Is it BSIPerformance.com?
BSIPerformance.net.
.net,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram. You can go to Bodie Stroud at Instagram. It's everywhere.
You're on Instagram? You don't follow me?
I do follow you.
Dude,
I'm always giving you hearts, and you never, you gave me one heart because I had a Monster Garage sign behind my I was welding. Monster Garage.
I just like all the stuff with the Frenchies.
I mean, like, heart. What's
that? That was Jesse's Instagram assistant doing that.
Oh, yeah. I think it's him. Because I do follow you, and it seems pretty sincere. So
yeah, that's me.
Yep. The only way intern's keep doing in touch. A really good job, man.
Yeah. I wish. I'm gonna teach the monkey how to do it.
Yeah,
you got a monkey.
But
love,
you know,
the
we
monkey.
Got another guest waiting back in the green room, Matt.
Yeah, we're gonna bring him out here,
Justin from Xbox. He's gonna talk to us about all the new stuff that's happening there.
Cool.
So
what's up, Richard?
Hey, guys. Man, Jesse, I know the show is off the hook, buddy.
I'm just happy to see Charlotte.
I love that. I know you do.
Like, I think we interacted with her way more.
Well, and, you know, she's easier to get along with than me.
You know what I just bought off of Guidry? I got the polish cart, the purple and...
I just asked somebody what happened to those, both of them.
It's sitting in my den.
Dude, I want that thing. Christmas is coming.
I'll send it to Charlotte because Charlotte probably hates
Charlotte
that thing.
Wants
she
it.
Probably wiped that thing down more.
She's over here.
Yeah. That was good.
No, we made two of those, and it was like they just disappeared off the face of the earth.
I found one.
Oh, that's so cool. Yep. If you find the other one, let me know because I want it. But we started the whole show. We were talking about our old days at Hot Rods by Boyd and Boyd Wheels, and there were so many stories. You're going to have to come back on the show, and we'll just talk some more stories.
We got to get on here with Chip.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That was like so many good stories about him. Just nothing interesting. Him just getting ripped off by like a hooker in Cincinnati. He chased her down, and then
I said,
like,
"There's stories we can tell, and stories we can't tell." You're bringing them all up.
No big deal.
But hey, the other thing, Jesse, is that there were. Now I just totally lost my train of thought.
Do we put them next to each other, or do we put them on opposite?
During the '90s, I used to do a little bit of drinking.
No,
what? Like, that's, we could do a whole show on like drinking at SEMA with like me, Boyd, Fat Jack, Little John, like
the guys were just crazy, man.
Like, I mean, the best story, one real quick before we split, like we had like a Lincoln Town Car, and it was myself, Fat Jack, Little John, and
well, whenever you put I Fat think Jack was, into the mix, well, things went off the, what's, off the
I
rails.
I think it was Lombardo.
Yeah, Lombardo.
And me, like a 24-year-old kid, like, yeah, I'll go with you dudes. Like, driving around, and we like pulled, and we went into a bar, and Fat Jack parked the Lincoln Town Car rental against the wall, like started spinning the tires, set the cruise control to 90 miles an hour. We went in, had some shots, came back out, and the car was like on the rims, shooting sparks.
like I said, if Fat Jack was there, things went off the rails.
That's what seemed to be
while they were playing Liar's Poker. Yeah. So it was like, oh, man.
I got to try that.
See, you got to listen to Shift and Stare. We'll have more of this for you.
Yeah, I mean, everybody sees Boyd's. Like, oh, Brad Fenshaw, who's the president? And Jesse ran, you know, the motorcycle stuff, worked at the Hot Rod Shop. But they don't realize, like, the cast of characters, like, when I came in there, like, Boyd Coddington, Chuck Lombardo, Pete Shaporis, Little John, and Fat Jack. All those guys started their shops off of pyramid schemes.
Yes, they did.
So, true story, in the early 80s, so... The whole cast of characters that was around Hot Rods by Boyd, it was like all these well-to-do clientele, but there was also a lot of guys with like three-quarter length leather jackets. And
they called
like,
it climbing the pyramid.
Yeah. And like, yeah. Boyd told me my first day is like, Lombardo came by to meet me. He's like, okay, whatever you do, don't ever do any business with Lombardo. Like, you know, like they all, it was
those were the days, man. I mean,
Oakland Roadster Show, and like we won it, and it was like, I was awesome for me, 24-year-old kid. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I was so young at Hot Rods by Boyd when I started. I think Pele from Sweden was the next youngest, and he was 40. And so no one would even, I mean, I was like long.
No, wait a minute. We're not that far apart in age.
I mean, no, but you weren't. Well, you were like 35, 30s, early 30s.
How old are you now?
49.
Well, see, and I'm 50.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Wait, what?
But yeah, no, I was like 35.
The last cake we saw, didn't say that.
When I worked there, no one would even speak to me. They're like, you know, Boyd brought me in. Dick was cool, but everybody else was like, man, who's this kid? And I remember I knew after like a month, I was TIG welding in the back welding room at the hot rod shop, and a Greninger came by with a hammer and went wham on the table while I was welding. I'm like, okay, cool.
Because when we hired you, you came up with Performance Machine, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Bowder stole me.
Bowder. There's another one, man. That guy was awesome.
You know, I got arrested.
It's going to be a 3-hour show, by the way.
But. Yeah, Bowder.
I know. Hey, yeah, we got to wrap this up. So, Jesse, you got anything you want to plug?
Well, where do we find you online, at least?
Just jessejames.com.
Right on. Yeah, and the firearms company, the gun?
It's jjfu.com.
Yesterday was all about the F-bomb. Today it's all about the right? FU.
Yeah. legit.
Well, and West Coast Choppers is still, build bikes and still active. And so that's it.
Excellent. And hey,
thanks, man.
What's your wife up to?
She's standing over there.
I was just going to say, that's a whole nother show when Jesse comes back on. Because years at the drag strip, you got to, you know, I mean, you did so much with the last five years
on the crew, and it was, like, awesome because it's my wife, and she's badass. Yeah. So, nice. And I like to, like work, and, like, I serviced everything from the supercharger forward, both the Waterman pumps, all the oil pan, all the belts, all that stuff, and then people, like, got pissed at the drag races because, like, I'm part of the crew.
Yeah.
And they're like, come over here and take a picture with me. Like, they didn't.
Every
like
time I see you, you were working.
They know me from working my ass off, but then when they see me doing it, they're like, no, you need to come over here and sign my stuff. Yeah. And it like, I thought it was like, okay, I'm really part of the crew. Like with all these other guys, if I like working and I say like, oh, wait, hang on. I'm going to go sign some autographs and I'll be back to work in a minute. I thought it would like undermine it.
You know what? We got to get back to work.
All right.
And we've got to bring up our other guest because that guy's been patiently waiting back there. But let's jump up, Bodie. Let's get a quick photo.
Okay.
We'll have a little lull here in the show, but then we'll go right back at it.
When you're under the hood, ever notice how often you see Continental belts? Well, there's a reason for that. Continental is one of the world's largest original equipment suppliers for the automotive industry. Automakers around the world insist on Continental for original equipment belts. The U.S. Big Three, BMW, VW, over 30% of all new vehicles sold in North America. You know what that says? It says Continental knows OE because they are OE. Continental's OE Technology Series Multi-V belts for the automotive aftermarket are precision engineered for perfect fit, form, and function with a true OE pedigree. They're the belts engines already know, so you can confidently spec Continental's Multi-V belts. There's one for 98% of the vehicles on the road today. You may not know it, but Continental is also a leader in automotive technology, electronic components for things like autonomous driving and accident-free zones. They focus on innovative in every product they make, including OE Technology Series aftermarket belts.
So, Matt, we're here at SEMA, and today things have been crazy. We had Jesse James on the show, and it's been fun. I mean, this place is crazy. Now, just down, I don't know if you've been to the back of this hall that we're in, but Amsoil has a big booth back there.
Yep.
So I thought it'd be a great time. I was just by there. I thought it'd be a great time for us to do our Amsoil Race Face interview.
Yeah.
I just got on the phone, one of their racers, and he's not here at the show, but we get to talk to him via this technology of satellites and everything like that. And
we'll see if that works.
And you know, static and all kinds of stuff, you know. But, Jeff Seahorn from Seahorn Rally Team. Jeff, how are you today?
Good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, we're doing well. We're here at SEMA, and it's pretty cool because everything automotive is here. Have you ever been to the SEMA show?
I have been. I was actually scheduled to be there this year, but my car was going to be in Max's booth, but we kind of put the car in a ditch at the final round and didn't have enough time to get it SEMA ready. So
you rallied it right off the road, huh?
Yeah, we were pushing 100%, and one of our pace notes that I called out during recce was just a half a degree too aggressive, and put it in the ditch, and then just so happened there was a couple stumps that caught us and flipped us over, and that was the end of our rally. But prior to that, we had already won our previous round. We had won our class championship and had second overall, locked in for the national overall championship. So walked away from that round still champions, but didn't get a finish that round. So
now, what do you drive? I think I saw on your Instagram page a Subaru. Is that right?
Yep. So. So the current car I'm running is a 2015 WRX STI.
Okay.
And we run that in the limited open class, so it's more of the production-based class, aside from the much more modified open class cars. So it's more of a cost-effective class to run in for the privateer team that we are, but we're still. Still pretty close to the open class cars, just a way lower cost budget.
Now, explain what it is that you can do to the car to prep it for that class. Where are you on horsepower, and is it mostly just you guys working on suspension?
So limited open, you do the full chassis prep. We're not allowed to cut too much structure out of the car. Pretty much the whole chassis has to remain stock, minus you can remove brackets that aren't part of the unibody. And the open class cars is the other way around. Their cars are more cut from the front strut tower to the rear strut tower, and then everything else is custom, so that reduces the weight quite a bit. And then we're not allowed to do any wide body kits or anything like that. It has to be OEM fenders and quarter panels. So.
Well, you leave the stereo and the air conditioner in, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
You can if you want. just extra weight. But, it's not quite a production class, but they call it limited because you're limited to the chassis. The engine and drivetrain is pretty much similar to open class rules, minus you can't modify the cylinder heads, and we have to run a stock OEM-type turbo. So anything Subaru came out with, we can run. But we can't run anything aftermarket like the open class cars can. So power, my car produces right around 300, and it's restricted before the turbo. We run a 36-millimeter restrictor. So my power output of the car we're running is about 300 horsepower, but we make 425 foot-pounds of torque.
Right, so that's because of the restrictor. Then, so you're increasing the boost for more power than restricting it.
Yeah,
usually ends up in good torque production, but limiting the total horsepower.
Yeah, so the car makes its peak horsepower right around 5,000 RPM, and then the restrictor kind of chokes it off after that. So you tend to just short shift it and keep it in the torque band, and they're still pretty quick. We hit 115. Often, and then I think 129 is the fastest I've been on gravel with a restrictor car. So
yeah, that good.
Now, where are you guys based out of?
So we're based out of Spokane, and then just south of Spokane is a town called Rockford. So we're the first biggest little town from Spokane. So that's where I grew up, and that's where I work, and then I actually live in Spokane. It's just 20 minutes away. So, yeah, we're based out of here. I built the car in our garage here in Rockford myself, did all the cage fabrication and most all the chassis modifications and stuff like that, all right here. So, yeah, we're the small town privateer team that's, you know, competing against all the big factory teams.
We were just looking at some of your photos you post online. We saw your car upside down. says not okay on it.
Yeah. So yeah, that was I kind of jinxed myself there. At previous rounds, there's some pretty big jumps. So I had spray painted scented on the skid plate, and it. Coming down from jumps and stuff, it gets brushed off pretty quickly with all the rocks and stuff that we're sliding on. So I needed to paint something new on there. So when I was prepping my car before this last round, I was like, well, there's no big jump. I knew there was going to be any big jumps at this round. So I wrote not okay in case we did go over something. So, yeah, kind of a funny ending to a bad round. But, yeah, it got a lot of views, and people thought it was pretty funny. But
well, one of the things that I really dug when I was looking through your Instagram was it says Tour de Forest Rally, and there's this shoddy view, like, way above the tree line. There's a lot of, like, you know, cut-down forest or something. You're coming around a dirt road where it looks like there's a pretty good drop off. I mean, it, you know, what are some of those races like? What are some of the courses like that you're, you know, involved on up there?
Yeah, so that that shot I think you're talking of was taken from the Olympus Rally, and it's the same organization that puts on the Tour de Forest Rally. Very similar roads. That particular, I mean, the stage, I think Olympus probably has the most elevation changes on all the rallies that we participate in. So I think that one had almost like a 2,000 or 3,000 foot climb up to the top of that summit, and then maybe less than that. It's hard to tell, but it's a pretty good climb. That one had a pretty good exposure and drop off, so it's a really cool photo. But
that, I mean,
effectively,
with that,
we rally on Forest Service roads. So
oh, okay.
Olympus Roads, they're actually owned by one of the forest management companies called Green Diamond, and that one of the head managers of that company actually used to rally, so we get a lot of the road usages for that those two rallies from that company. So they're gated off private land that we get to rally on. But stage distances, like the stage we went off on was one of the shortest ones of the year. It was only around 4 miles, but we rally up to, I've rallied up to 27 mile stages before. So it can vary just on road usage and then how many miles they can fit into a rally, because they're typically 2-day events. So most of the time we're over 115 stage miles, up to 160 stage miles throughout 2 days. Different events, sometimes there's 3 days, like the Oregon Trail Rally, which is also fairly local to me up here in the Northwest. They have a pretty much a super special night at Portland International Raceway. So that one's a 3-day event. So we do the super specials on the Friday evening and then the real stage road Saturday, mm-hmm. Sunday.
So where are you guys now in the racing schedule?
So we, Tour de Forest was the end of our season. That was October 6th. And then our season will start back up again with ARA January 25th as Snowdrift Rally. And I think it's Atlanta, Michigan. It's up in the Upper Peninsula.
They're already getting snow, so they're getting ready for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's season's coming up quick. So we got a car's at a frame and body shop getting all the major sectioning work done on it. So it's repairable. I'll have that back next week, I think, and then I'll do the rest of the prep on it, like all the easy stuff, the roof skin and all the finished body work and stuff. Just not the – I can do a lot of body work, but I can't – I'm not good at sectioning and doing the metal work and bending stuff. Those guys are professionals at it. So
yeah. All right, well, you should write shift and steer on your skid plate. So next time you're flying through the air, you know, people just know about the podcast instead. That way you don't jinx yourself.
Well,
I agree with that.
Nobody ever sees it.
So, Jeff, we've got to go. But, you know, where can our listeners find more about your team and about what you're doing out there in the rally circuit up in the Northwest?
So they can find us on, amsoil.com. We have a driver, co-driver highlight on there.
Mm-hmm.
We also are featured on Maxis, Maxis's website. And then our personal websites are Seahorn Rally Team on Facebook, and then 56 Seahorn on Instagram. And I can't remember Karen's tag on Instagram. Karen Jankowski on Instagram, and then also the American Rally Association is the organization that we race with, and our schedule and everything is on their site. So
that's great. Well, we'll be watching you. We just followed you on Instagram. We'll be watching you into the new season, see how you do with AMSOIL and all your other sponsors, and good luck, man.
Yep, expect another fun-filled season. We should be doing a very similar year as we did last year. So
that's great. Well, back to back. You're going for back to back. Well, hey, we appreciate you. We appreciate you calling in for the AMSOIL Race Face section of the show. And Matt and I, we've got another guest here on the MagnaFlow stage up here. So we're getting ready to get going again. Sorry you couldn't make it to SEMA this year, but maybe we'll see you there next year, Jeff.
Yep. Have fun down there, and thanks for having me on board.
Perfect.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, guys.
So that was Jeff Seahorn from Seahorn Rally Team. And those rally guys, they're a little bit nuts. I mean, I love what they do, but, man, you see them, especially in some of the foreign countries, when they're just going through crowds of people at full speed and everything. It's kind of like off-road racing down in Mexico when you see them and the guys are chasing their chickens across the road and there's a truck coming at 110, you know. So, hey, this has been another AMSOIL Race Face section, and Matt and I, we're getting back on stage here at SEMA.
Hey, guys, if you like this show, you're going to love the new Underdog Sports Network on Podcast One from Chris Horridel. Check out all the exciting shows on the Underdog Sports Network every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
How cool is that, right? These guys haven't seen each other in a long time. We get to hear all those stories, sit in on a little history. I know I'm a fan, too. I've never met Jesse, so I was real excited about today, and to hear some of those stories firsthand is pretty cool.
Yeah, I was kind of curious, like, is SEMA the same as it was? Has it evolved?
Oh,
is it
a lot bigger?
No. From 30 years ago?
you know, Jesse was bringing up some stories that were back in my recessed memories, you know? And, I mean, it's so cool. We have some fun. I mean, it was crazy days back then.
And he was crazy. I hung out with him for a couple of weeks, and he was crazy.
That's it?
It was quite
authentically crazy.
But I mean, everyone always asks me, how was it, you know, doing Monster Garage with Jesse? And I always go back to it, seriously, because it was real.
Yeah.
They literally threw me on the TV. They're like, can you draw? I'm like, yeah, I used to be able to draw. Can you draw the car? So Jesse's designing it, and I'm drawing it, and we went straight to work. We built it, and that was it. I won a toolbox, and that was it.
That's my buddy Bob Lopez, who built the wood. He said the same thing. He was like, dude, I've never worked so hard
as I did. Now I've done so much other TV, it's nothing like
what that was.
Nothing like it.
Where's
so
the toolbox?
Scripted. It's in my garage.
Okay.
He sold it.
Hey, Bodie, you ever play any video games?
Start my business. What?
You ever play any video games? Forza or anything?
Oh, yeah.
You into that?
Well, good.
Yeah. Listen, man, we got him right here.
I know. You'll want to trade some cards, dude.
Say hi, Justin. Also,
hi there. Can you hear me? All right.
He also has the patience of a saint, because he was supposed to be the first guy up here, but you know what? Some guy jumped in your chair. He came off the side of the stage.
Sorry, buddy.
We were going to have you come through the curtains with music and everything, and you just jumped up on the
smoke and smoke and the whole thing.
Yeah, we had pyro.
Dun, 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 or something, but
Justin, what's your title over at Forza or Xbox or both.
Manager of partnerships, essentially.
For Forza Motorsport.
For Forza Motorsport.
Oh, well, perfect to be on our show. You can partner with us.
There we go.
Yeah, a lot of handshaking, huh?
Anybody that plays Forza Motorsport, on the cover of every game every year, you see an awesome car. You see a GT2 RS. You see a Ford GT. And they're all a big part of the game. Justin's the guy that puts those deals together. He is the magic maker when it comes to that kind of stuff. So thanks for coming out here.
Well, thank you.
He gives us what we want to see.
Yeah, there we go.
Tell us a little bit about what's going on with the game. You're coming off of an E3 a couple of months ago, which is the SEMA show for video games.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we just launched Forza Horizon 4. That just came out. So that's our new open world game, you know, where you can explore the world. It's got four seasons now. Everybody experiences the weather at the same time, the change of the seasons.
I drove a McLaren in England on that game.
There you go.
Yes.
Exactly right. There we go.
The two franchises are Forza Motorsport is the track in the racing game, and Forza Horizon is the you run over people in the jungle in the street.
It's real life.
Run over
it's
just zebras
life.
And giraffes, right?
Yeah. No people.
There's Brad during the day, and then Brad Sima at night.
That's right.
I got to say, what's really cool is that McLaren sent me a car to drive, and I drove it for a week, and then I drove it on the video game, and it was almost more fun on the video game because I could do more with it.
You know?
It's more real in the game.
Yeah.
You can throw it in the wall and hit reset.
There you go. No limits on the mileage on that one.
No, so. You can throw it sideways, not really worry about, you know, are they going to frown on this?
Right. No insurance, no car payment.
It's very easy.
It's much easier.
So the world one like that, you know,
open world game, yeah.
Open world game.
Open world game.
How many different countries?
Kind of thing.
How many different countries?
Anywhere.
How many different cars?
Well, it's set in the UK this time. So the last version was set in Australia. This one's set in the UK.
Why I was in the English countryside.
And then Edinburgh is the big city that we built this year. And then you have all the different areas. You can, you know, if you've seen Top Gear, you've seen those beautiful roads. Mm-hmm. They go out and drive out in the Scottish Highlands and so on. That's all in there. The open fields are in there. The seaside's in there. So all those different environments. And then the weather changes. The seasons change. Every week is a new season in the game. And everybody experiences it at the same time.
And it's really cool. I do a show with Mike Brewer from Wheeler Dealers. It's called Mike Brewer Behind the Wheel, and we talked about this game, and he was looking at the preview was out, and he was like, I think I know that area.
So it's really realistic then.
Yeah, we go out and source, you know, the real roads, and then we kind of fictionalize we can't build the whole country, obviously, but we fictionalize some of the roads, but we absolutely source it and build it as real as we can.
Do you film the areas ahead of time and then mimic the
3D
game?
3D scan it, photograph it.
I know. I want to know how it works.
That's
why he's here.
The amount of science and stuff that you guys put into these games are phenomenal. We do a show every year with you guys with CarCast as well, and Dan Greenewald, I guess he's creative director. He comes in and we just do 40 minutes of nerdy programming talk about how it's not even so much in the office as it is out of the office, just going and working with tire companies to test. Yeah. The grip of tires.
Wow.
They do more testing for the video game than the tire companies do for the public.
Get out.
I swear they do. That's
stories.
Not an
really?
Oh,
yeah.
That's not an exaggeration. Like, they really do.
And mapping those cars. I was over at Adam's studio with you that day, and they were mapping out the car. And, I mean, all those points. And, I mean, it's like, what was it with the speedometer on the one or something where it had to be...
Yeah,
we calibrated.
We've got two cars in the game, I believe.
Yeah,
we got two Paul Newman racing cars in the game. Yeah. And it's very elaborate process of getting those cars in the game. They send over a nice gentleman who stands outside in a black shirt for 10 hours in the summer for 2 days, just photographing and measuring and scanning and just going through it. Like, and he takes notes on the ground with chalk. So he has the car on the ground and everything's just like written in chalk around the car. It was just like, I don't know if that's how he did
the angles.
Just everything that he's doing and photographing it and sending it all back. And you guys back in the studio are crunching away on it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the size and scope of Forza Motorsport, I guess, as a franchise. How many people play this game?
Yeah, so we've got 12 million people playing Forza right now.
That's so about the same amount as here.
Yeah, pretty much. Feels like it.
Statistically, you all play Forza Motorsport at some point.
That was for you guys. That was for you guys.
Yeah, Tuesday felt like that. Big show this year. And then on the broader Xbox platform, we've got about 50, I think our latest number is 58 million people playing on Xbox.
Oh, man.
And those are active users, meaning those are people once a month go in and do something for more than 5 minutes.
Actually, it's more impressive when you say that, because of the 58 million active Xbox users, 12 million of them are playing Forza.
Yeah,
playing that's Forza a huge chunk of total Xbox users, right?
Well, I know you guys have heard me say this before, but we truly believe it in that turning car lovers into gamers, gamers into car lovers is one of the mantras that we have, right? And we went out and saw Bodie a couple of years ago out of his shop and saw the passion his crew had building one of Adam's cars and doing some stuff. You know, that passion is real for us, and we want to continue that next generation, get them excited about cars.
Yeah. Well, it does, because if you take a guy who maybe is just on the fringe and he starts getting into it and he gets the excitement and he gets that wanderlust of getting behind the wheel, he's going to want to experience it in the real world at some point, you know? Hopefully when he gets a license and insurance.
Yeah, there you go.
So well, I sure wish my son would hurry up.
My son's one of them. Your son's a great fabricator. He just doesn't want to drive cars.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. And he'll play the game all day long.
Yeah. That's like my son, too.
Everybody here in this building, every car company out here should be fans of Forza Motorsport, because that's the greatest way of getting a young generation to eventually come here and buy all of these parts.
Yeah, well, we hear stories all the time from the manufacturing partners of kids coming into the showrooms and know more about the car than the salesman does, you know? And they learn that all in the game.
In Forza Motorsport, you can build the car, or in Forza Horizon as well?
Both games.
You can build the car.
Yeah.
Build a car,
and design your own stuff.
Do all the tuning on it.
Play this game.
All of that. Yeah, there's a lot.
You're not a gamer?
No, I mean, I haven't really played
tic-tac-toe, Brad. Tic-tac-toe.
Like that in a long time. Yeah.
How do I get a BSI chassis in there so we want to build a Mustang in the game?
Well, I was just thinking of the numbers of the people playing that game, so I'm thinking maybe if I gave a game away for chassis, or how could I turn my chassis sales into those numbers?
There you go.
I just need half of those numbers. Yeah. I'd be happy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Right?
How has 4K changed the platform at all? Has it?
Well, it's been outstanding. Yeah. I mean, obviously, all the TV manufacturers are quite excited about that. But the move to 4K, you know, when I saw you guys here last year, that was our big push, right, with the new console and everything. And that's been a huge success. And the fidelity on it's just incredible. You know, if you haven't seen a 4K TV yet, you're missing out.
Yeah, the look of these things, the HDR, I mean, it's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
I think
like you can touch it.
Oh, my God, it's so real. I did one of those moves where Justin sent me an Xbox One Forza Motorsport Edition, which I thank you so much. It's super rare, by the way. It was not easy to get. It was like 3 years of asking him. And then I had to go spend a shitload of money on a new TV.
Yeah. We helped sell some TVs.
But if you went away for Black Sunday.
I think one of the most amazing things that we've seen from, you know, your company and like that is how we're seeing cars that are being introduced from car companies in the game. And like at E3 and like that, I mean, it's like that was unheard of years ago.
Yeah, well, since the last time I saw you, you know, we had the McLaren Senna did its North American debut with us at our E3 conference.
At E3, who would have ever dreamt that of happening? Yeah. I mean, I guess you guys did because you helped make it.
Who would have ever drunk that?
That's actually an interesting point. On our other show, we've been talking a lot with Alistair Weaver, our friend from Edmunds.com. He's in the new car business, and he's telling us more and more about how car companies are representing themselves less at the big auto shows, Detroit, and like we haven't seen Ferrari at the LA Auto Show in years, and that's a huge market for them in California. And now car companies are debuting cars with you guys at E3 or a Porsche at Rennsport, and they still have a presence, some of them, at the big auto shows, but it's no longer...
It's diminishing.
So they're debuting them in the game rather than... Yeah.
Or they're bringing the real car to his event, and it's simultaneously debuting in the game and at the event. So if you want to see the real car, you don't go to the Detroit Auto Show. You go to E3 to their booth, and you see the McLaren Senna or the GT2 RS.
Wow, talk about
that's
migration.
That's the first time you're going to see it. So now the automotive press is going to all of these events.
Yeah.
So the worlds are merging a little bit more.
It's crazy, crazy, right?
It's really crazy.
It's like debut a chassis at E3 with these guys.
How are we going to do this with the Mustang or something instead of
some of the other events? And you'd be surprised what it'll do.
No, I believe it.
Yeah. So how is this going to evolve in a video game world? I mean, there's a lot of VR and things coming out there. Are you guys moving in that direction?
Always evolving. You know, the VR stuff is interesting, you know, as part of broader Microsoft. Obviously, we've got a ton of investment in new technology. HoloLens is one of those things that we do a lot of work on now. So we're always looking at that tech.
Because isn't that ultimately the goal, you know?
Well, not necessarily ultimately the goal, because I think what we've learned is that that VR tech, a lot of people get nauseous.
Uh-huh.
It's rough. And so it's tough to see that in a mass adoption sort of model right now. We may evolve it, but we'll see.
But you see more people are more comfortable with the flat screen.
Yeah, flat screen, controller, pedal and wheels, you know.
Because it seems to me, and clearly I've already stated I'm not like a huge gamer, so coming from that perspective,
not yet.
It just seems to me though that, you know, if you want the experience of driving the car, the closer you get to that VR experience, you're going to really, if you're doing that much detail on the tread of the tire and how it feels to drive it. Well,
but they also have simulators where you're sitting in a nice driver's seat with pedals and a steering wheel that feeds back. You know, there's some really great tools, gaming tools out there too, to enhance that experience.
We've got a rig over at in our shop. We've got three screens, I think. Well, we had three, maybe we have the one, but we got it all set up.
Yeah. Well, and the other big thing, which is probably another topic for another day, is just the growth of esports and streaming too. So now the stat is there are more people watching people playing video games than are people playing
games. That's what blows me away.
Huge numbers on YouTube.
Exponentially grown so fast.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's automotive entertainment, essentially. Yeah. Right? And the game now that Forza Horizon 4, we've got actually built streaming into it, make it easier for people to stream them playing. So people can watch them, and they earn credit in the game for streaming.
What's the allure?
But that's their world.
It's like anything, Heather. And now the big networks are vying for the competitive licensing rights to put them on the air. NBC, people like that. And it's becoming huge.
Wow.
I mean, Jay Leno's old studio is now where they do a lot of the gaming competition.
You're right. The Tonight Show at NBC in Burbank is now a video gaming like Twitch studio. This one's like Activision and Blizzard or something. But
Those of you that dye your hair, the world is changing.
Hey, guys, we got to wrap it up. We're beating up against the clock here. And what's next on the horizon? What's the next big announcement?
On the horizon,
That's good. Yes. That's good. Well, two real quick things here this week at SEMA. We debuted in the Ford booth a new Ranger with Addictive Desert Design. And it's based on our Xbox Design Lab, which does custom controllers. Pretty cool setup. We're going to be giving that away through some sort of charity thing here in the near future.
So go
check that out and check the web for pictures of that. And the other thing, Hot Wheels had their Legends Tour conclude here this year. And we announced with them we've got a bunch of cool anniversary content coming out just in time for the holidays on both Forza Motorsport 7 and Forza Horizon 4.
So. That's awesome.
Yeah. And where can we find you online? ForzaMotorsport.com, is that right?
ForzaMotorsport.net.
ForzaMotorsport.net.
Oh, also, I've been talking all day. Also, next year, look for our Mustang.
We're going to talk about that next year.
I'll drive that one.
Thanks again for having me, guys.
I want to thank you for coming by. Bodie, thank you for so much for coming by.
Good to see
you, Heather
guys.
Storm for co-hosting with us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And Bodie, where's your websites again for the chassis?
You go to bsiperformance.net. You can go to bodiestroud.com. You can find me on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook.
Excellent.
Bodie Stroud, tallerthanmatt.com.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
And Matt, where can they find us and you online?
Right on. So shiftandsteer.com if you guys want to hear this full show as a podcast with Bodie and Justin and Jesse James. Go to shiftandsteer.com. That'll be posted there. And all of our social media is shiftsteermedia. Of course, you can find me at Moderator on all the social medias. Everything except Twitch.
Heather, where can they find you?
You can find me at Heather Storm LA on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So, and heatherstorm.com.
And how about on TV?
Garage Squad.
And Garage Squad. Actually, we just wrapped last night was our season finale for season 5.
I bet they're going to play them over again.
But you can watch it on Motor Trend On Demand.
There you go.
So you can watch all the episodes of the latest
season. I'm Aaron Hagar. You can find me all over social media, Aaron Hagar on the Rat Runner's Garage.
Hey, I want to thank everybody for making me look good, supporting my voice. I'm Brad Fanshawe. You can find me Brad Fanshawe on social media, except for Instagram. It's Bradley_Fanshawe, and I put most of my stuff on Instagram.
You're like 7 sentences away from not talking again for the rest of the week.
A lot of tea tonight.
I've been breathing in smoke out at the track.
Oh, yeah. I still got to sing tomorrow.
Hey, that's it, man. We'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you.
Tomorrow is Friday already, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we'll be here from 11:15 to 12:15 tomorrow, and we got some great guests coming.
All right, guys, thanks again to Continental, but of course, Amsoil. Go to amsoil.com/shift.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure.
adventure at manseeksadventure.com.